sense.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your capable host, Todd Conklin, but you can just call me Todd. Is that fine? Do we got a setup? Hey, interesting podcast today. Going to move it in a little different direction, but that's why we do these podcasts. But before we get started, just wanted to take a few seconds to thank you for listening, putting me in your ears, and all our amazing guests. Really nice, nice outcomes to this. I think what's most important, and I've said it before, but I think it's worth repeating, is the fact that we're constantly building this community. And this is a great way of reinforcing each other as we go through this sometimes difficult journey where we're trying to kind of move performance of human beings from a kind of linear, old-fashioned view to a more modern systems understanding of how behavior and human beings and organizations and governance and all those things fit together. And it's great. It's been a pretty solid week here. I have enjoyed a great summer. Got to go out to my friends in Houston last week, and so I spent some time there, mostly talking about accident investigations and how we think about doing accident investigations. I probably should do a podcast on that. If you're interested, tell me. I probably couldn't teach you how to do an investigation. In fact, most of you could probably teach me way better than I could teach you. But I do think I have a pretty compelling conversation about how to think about doing an investigation. And remember, the way you think about an investigation is definitely going to color what you find. That sort of leads us to the introduction for today's podcast. You're going to hear a guy from PSI.org. I won't tell you what that is. You'll have to listen a little more to figure it out. His name's John Sauer, Johnny Sauer. He's a dear friend of mine. He's also an amazing human being. His entire life's work has pretty much focused around water and sanitation. And if I really pushed John, I think he would say his entire life work has really focused around the notion of sanitation. And I want you to see how a systems understanding of this problem globally has helped moved the idea of sanitation and water to a much different level. Now, spoiler alert, I'm just going to tell you, the interesting part of this conversation is not the water. The interesting part of this conversation is the sanitation. And in fact, without sanitation, water's not terribly helpful. But water is vital, and you must have it. But the relationship that exists between sanitation, water, individual communities, cultures, and governments is pretty compelling. And I think you'll find this podcast interesting, to say the least. Sit back and enjoy. You're going to go places you never thought you'd go before. You're going to spend 30 minutes talking about toilets. So, enjoy. In fact, you know what you ought to do? Get up right now and go to the restroom and listen to a podcast about toilets on a toilet. So without any further ado, here's John Sauer.
All right. So what are we talking about? A little sanitation, a little interchange, a little Edward T. Hall.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you kidding? We can talk about Edward T. Hall?
Yeah, man. We actually should talk about Edward T. Hall.
I'm completely in if we talk about Edward T. Hall.
I think we've been waiting our whole life for this moment.
Well, I'm glad it's here. It's a good thing to do on a Sunday evening, that's what I think.
Yeah, no kidding.
This podcast is mostly for people who work in this idea we call safety differently. And what it is it's a more systems view of problem solving. So by way of background, the traditional view in safety is that you would look around until you find the place where the person screwed up, and then you'd fix the person. And what we're learning is that almost none of the problems that we have originate at the person. Well, that same idea, I think, holds pretty well to what you do. So by way of introduction, just tell us who you are and who you work for and what you do. And make it pithy and interesting, please.
Well, thank you, Monsieur Conklin.
That's right, and French. And as much of French as you can possibly do is perfect.
So John Sauer is the name.
Gotcha.
I'm the senior technical advisor, which means that I support support all 69 of Population Services International's programs worldwide in water and sanitation and hygiene activities. And that is obviously a pretty monumental task. And but what we're finding, Todd, is actually exactly what you're saying, that the challenges have been we've been almost taking this infrastructure approach to trying to solve the world's water and sanitation challenges, meaning that we go in, we build a borehole, we build a toilet, and obviously that doesn't work for a number of reasons. It's actually exactly what you said earlier. It's a systems change that we really need to get sustainable service delivery type results. And we don't have to look too far to how to make it successful. I mean, we can see this in the United States, in that we can look at utilities, water and sanitation utilities. I guess the big difference is that we, in developing countries like Uganda and Ghana, we can't necessarily build these massive utilities in a lot of these countries. So we have to actually look at what we call on-site systems, especially for sanitation, where the household level, you actually have a product that contains your waste in an appropriate way, and that can somehow be disposed of and brought to a center for treatment, for reuse, or ultimate disposal.
I'm really curious in the relationship that exists systemically between water and sanitation, because it strikes me that water is a sexy problem that people want to give money and time and effort and you know, support world. Who doesn't want anybody to have water, for God's sakes? That's easy. But what's the relationship that toilet plays with the water well?
Well, if you look worldwide, we talk about water related diseases. We talk about waterborne diseases. The reality is that is just shit in your water, for all intents and purposes. Not totally. I mean, there's also hygiene and hand washing that plays a role, for example, with pneumonia, that would not be necessarily a sanitation related disease. But, you know, that's getting a little bit too much in the details, I think. I the reality is that sanitation is at the heart of creating public health. If you can get good sanitation, then, or you can somehow find a way to treat the water so that it does not have contaminants, fecal contaminants in it, then you can start to really get huge public health gains.
So really what you're telling me, and tell me if I'm wrong, but you're telling me that there's an order, and this is the systems view, that you have to take care of the sanitation really before the water it becomes sort of the most important item, that you can dig wells. And I would guess, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but in Uganda, how hard is it to find water?
Well, I think maybe we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves. I think the systems issue is that we have to address these challenges so that we have good systems in place so that both water and sanitation services can be delivered sustainably to consumers.
Excellent.
Because at the moment, what's happening is that you have huge challenges to supply chain issues, for example, for sanitation. There's huge problems with products. Right now, there just simply aren't the right kind of products available for consumers that consumers want to buy, that they actually find are aspirational. What you actually see more of is that people see the kind of products that are out there. For example, the ventilated improved pit latrine, which in some ways was a wonderful invention, but we're 30 years down the road now, and we have hardly iterated on that particular product. Show me a cell phone that hasn't been iterated on in the last year or 6 months. And we're still trying to hawk in this sector products that aren't really desirable to consumers. And so, this is a huge challenge.
So take me from the beginning. You go into a place How do you start to build that infrastructure? How do you start to build that system? How do you get people to welcome or at least entertain, I guess, best case scenario, accept the changes that you guys are talking about?
I think what we've done is we've really addressed this human-centered approach. So there's really two levels to that. One is that we first look at what the consumer really wants, and this is called sort of the human-centered design approach. And then we take that thinking and we try to come up with products and solutions that are desirable to the and aspirational to the consumer. And then we take what we've coined as a human-centered selling approach, and we really look at what are the problems of the consumers and the businesses, actually, not just the consumers but the businesses as well. And we say, okay, what kind of product can A meet those needs, the sort of minimal viable product can meet the needs of those consumers and then also can meet the needs of businesses who are just trying to make a basic margin. So without meeting those two sweet spots with any kind of innovation or technology, then you can't have a sustainable system.
Walk me through these human-centered solutions. I'd be really curious because it sounds like what you do and what we do is pretty darn similar.
Yeah, it's sitting down and it's embedding yourself in a community, in an area. You know, it's building on this whole participatory rural appraisal thinking that's quite well known, but it's taking that further to the perspective of, okay, what kind of then product can we actually come up with that's going to meet the needs of the consumer? And I'll give an example. There's actually a phenomenal product that's been generated by American Standard, which is a sanitary ware company that we're all familiar with. And it's called the Sato Pan, or as some of our engineers call it, the flapper, because it actually has this flapper device, much like you probably remember in the old airplane toilets, that there were those toilets that flapped down and flapped up. It's kind of similar, but this creates a water seal. It keeps flies out. It keeps the smell out. So it's a huge advancement and a huge aspirational product. You can retrofit that in your what I was talking about before, this ventilated improved pit latrine, which is in many ways not a hygienic toilet because the thinking behind that ventilated improved pit latrine is that you would actually cover it and that would create the seal to keep the smell and the flies out. But the reality is that often that cover does not get put in place. So you retrofit this Sato Pan in the VIP toilet and now you actually have a toilet that can be clean, that's creating a water seal, that's creating a barrier between the humans and their feces.
Tell me more about when you talk about participatory role definition, participatory, I can't even say it, John, participatory
role appraisal.
Tell me what that means.
That's a process that, again, you spend time with the community doing transect walks, mapping out certain challenges and problems so that you can make it real within a community. And with the sanitation sector, one of the things that's been done is they've done this with where people open defecate. So they actually ask people, that they sit with the community, they say, okay, obviously people are open defecating in this community, you know that. And they start to giggle and they talk about that in a sort of humorous way. And then they have people draw out, okay, where are they open defecating? And then they start to build a map of where that is happening. And that gives you this very direct sense of that, wow, it's not that far from where you're living. And then then there's other processes that happen. And this approach has been called community-led total sanitation. The challenge has been that is a good eye-opener for the community, but it doesn't necessarily then address the solution. It lets them understand the problem and makes them very cognizant of that challenge and that problem. But then they're empowered to want to do something, but then there's nothing for them to actually do except build a very rudimentary type of toilet, like out of sticks perhaps, and and they can build a toilet out of wood, for example, but that's going to be washed away when the first rain comes. So the problem is the supply chain hasn't matched up with where the actual demand being created is happening.
Wow. That's a really – it's almost like using an economic model to understand sanitation. Has that really helped you guys in your effectiveness? Are you better at doing this now than you were?
Definitely. There's actually – I mean the big – for sure we're better at it. And this is really what we call this sort of the market development approach. It's really taking this – how do we get a functioning market? And this is so that you have – manufacturers of different products, you have aggregators who are, you know, pulling together the different materials that need to be in place for products to be produced and to be sold. And then you, of course, there's the service providers, and then there's the consumer. So it's really pulling all the pieces of the production to use chain together so that they can actually function. But of course, there's a lot of challenges still to do that. And one of the biggest challenges is that, quite honestly, Todd, we don't have enough R&D. We don't have enough innovation happening in the product design. We've had some activity in that area, which has been great, but it's sort of left behind the what can we actually do right now? You know, there's a lot of this design that's happening that's, you know, in five, if we're lucky, but probably like 10, 15 years that will come online. But we need things now. We got to solve this problem now.
And why do you think the R&D is not sort of keeping up with the demand?
You know, that's a great question. I don't really have the answer to that yet. It's certainly that I think maybe it goes back to your earlier point that people find water sexy and they find sanitation a little scary.
And yet without sanitation, you could bring water in all day, but if people crap in their own water – then they still die, and babies die, and old people die, and I guess middle-aged people die as well, but not as fast as babies and old people, right?
Well, it's definitely more important for younger people, but then again, yes, people still can get sick, and when you're elderly, then you're also more susceptible. But the real big challenge, and research is backing this up right now, is that what happens when people have repeated bouts of diarrhea and other sanitation-related, water-related diseases, then they have cognitive impairment and their cognitive development is challenged. They are stunted. Their growth does not go as fast as it should. So there's a lot of health challenges that impact people for the rest of their lives. So even if they don't die, they're still being screwed royally for the rest of their lives, in fact. So even though they don't die right then, they're going to face challenges until for their whole adult life that are going to hold them back from really being productive citizens. And that will affect them into their elderly lives.
Could part of the problem be that people think this is easy to solve? That it's as simple as if people would just be more careful where they crap, or they used more Western ideas around hygiene? I mean, do people see this as a simple problem? Have we oversimplified the problem so that people think water's more a big issue and the toilet part just kind of falls in the line?
I think we have oversimplified what it takes to develop these markets, and we haven't put enough investment and energy into actually really trying to get to the bottom of if markets are functioning or not. And also we haven't put enough time into the systemic change that has to happen to make these things work. Because honestly, this is not just about the consumer. It's not just about the product, even though I've talked a lot about that. It's also about it's very much about governments, and it's about government capacity. And again, this gets back to taking this systems thinking approach around this problem, looking at all the players. And when we do market development analysis, we're also looking at the government, because we're looking at the core functions of the market, the four P's as we all know them in business, product, price, promotion, placement. We're also looking at the supporting functions of the government of the market, like information and coordination. We're also looking at the rules functions, which is where the government comes into play, which is, are they budgeting for water and sanitation? Are they regulating appropriately? And that's also a shift, because for a long time, governments have been, and NGOs for that matter, have been playing a very active role in actually delivering the services. And what we need is for local institutions to be playing more of that role. So local private sector, for example.
Do the governments know they have a problem, or do they think the problem exists with the people? Whose problem is it? Maybe that's a better question.
It's all of our problems.
Gotcha there. But how do governments identify with the problem? Do they see it as a problem to be solved at the governance level, or do they see it as a problem to be solved at the individual level?
I think that's a very good question. I think there is a little bit of probably thinking it's a problem out there, and another challenge has been that you might have central governments thinking, oh yeah, okay, we care about this, we want to increase our budget, but then they don't necessarily have a place to put that money, because the district governments, which is where all this activity is happening, aren't necessarily on board. They don't have the financial management, the procurement procedures, the capacity to spend this money in a wise and impactful way. So they need to build capacity.
So when you talk about building capacity and you talk about market and market placement and all those things, is it you build the toilet and the culture changes, or you work on changing the culture and the toilet follows?
Well, there's a couple of layers here, I think, and it depends on where, what context we're talking in. But I think the bottom line is
give us context if you need to. That's fine.
I mean, I think the bottom line, Todd, is that we have to solve the problem of the consumers first and foremost, because they have problems, they have challenges, they have limitations in what money they have, what resources they have at their disposal. And they're making tough choices every day. And so it's how do we present them with an option to for example have a toilet, but one that they really want, because right now they're actually making conscious decisions not to have a toilet because they don't see value in what's being offered them in the market.
Wow.
And so there's a huge change that has to happen in solving their problem. And that is, in my mind, that is a behavior change problem. That's really trying to look at understanding what the consumer wants, the attitudes and beliefs of the consumer, so that we can provide them with real products that they want and desire.
So if I could push you on that, I would say, is the behavior what you want to change, or is it the big C culture? Because I would suggest in this case, if I don't know the positive alternatives this option gives me, then behavioral decisions, behavioral choices really are more of, this is the way we've always done it. We've always gone to this corner of this lot and defecated here. And so I would question, and it's wide open for you to push back or answer, is open defecation a product of people choosing to poop anywhere they want to, or is it a product of a long culture of open defecation?
Well, in some contexts, for example, India, I think that there is this long culture of that, and that's where I think there's a need really for social behavior change communication to really play a role, because even if families want a toilet, oftentimes it's to protect the women in the household. But the men think, okay, I'll just still go out and poop where I've always pooped. And so there is also this need to think of other layers of behavior change, for sure.
Wow. I mean, this is remarkable, because my bet is most people listening to the podcast probably haven't even thought about this. I mean, this is such an interesting use of systems thinking, and it's such an important use of systems thinking. How can people find out more?
Well, people can visit our website for a start, which is psi.org.
Gotcha.
And they could shoot me an email if they really wanted to.
Okay. What's your email address?
jsauer@psi.org.
Gotcha. Thanks for your time, man. This was really interesting. You've made me think.
Yeah, Todd, I don't know how I could possibly do that.
You just did it. Play it back, baby. Play it back. There you have it. 26 minutes and 11 seconds of toilet talk. Potty humor. That's a little cheesy. There's a million of these, though. I could go on a long time with this if you need me to. But it's all kind of a bunch of crap, ultimately, in the end, isn't it? Yes, thank you. That was my last one. What'd you think? It's a really interesting podcast, because I think this really illustrates quite nicely how our thinking and their thinking are more similar than different. And the problems are compelling on both sides of the equation. That systems view, which we didn't invent, we're not claiming to invent, it's been around a long time. That systems view takes you to much different problem resolution. And it strikes me that the key factor here is in the problem resolution. In fact, I think it's how we frame the problem that colors how we solve the problem. So would Heisenberg, so would Hawthorne. There's a lot of people that think that. But I think we see it almost every single day. I thought when he talked about going into the community and talking to the people and polling and addressing and understanding actually what's happening, the classic work is imagined versus work is done, or crapping is imagined versus crapping is actually done, that's pretty powerful stuff. And when you think about operational learning and how change is facilitated and socialized, marketed to the consumer, we heard that a bunch today, that's a pretty profound way to look at this work we do. And that's exactly why we do this podcast. I hope you enjoyed this immensely. John is a super interesting guy, and if I can get you the least bit excited about this, man, the connections you have and the connections your connections have, maybe we could look at some ways to understand the importance of sanitation and hygiene to the overall ability to be in the world. That's the podcast. Thanks for listening. As always, thank you for subscribing. Tell your friends. It matters a ton. And we're starting to get some big numbers, and that's really nice. Just thanks for being you, and thanks for doing the work you do. We're building community every day, one person, one podcast at a time. As always, the summer's about to escape us, so make sure you do something fun every single day. Just get up and do something fun right now. Learn something every single day, and for goodness sakes, be safe. I can't believe we had this much toilet talk and nobody said one thing about putting the seat back down. Huh, go figure.